Tansy Turkup joins us now, editor of GadgetDetective.com. And we're going to talk about this government announcement offering AI training for up to 10 million people to improve our tech skills. Fevzi, you can tell us more then.
Yeah, so they made an announcement on Tuesday, the UK government, free AI training for all adults. What they want to do is upskill the British workforce, and they're aiming by 2030, which is actually not that far away, to have upskilled 10 million workers. They've partnered with people like Google, Microsoft, IBM and others to provide these courses. So these are not government courses, but 14 of the courses, at least, are benchmarked by the government and certified as being of a good quality. And when you complete these online courses, you get, or you can get, depending on the course, a little badge to say that you completed it, and you can include that on your CV.
What, one that you wear on your shirt or something?
No, an electronic one, unfortunately.
Oh, they've sent me a badge.
A badge of what? Yeah, it's a big
piece of badge. AI.
Yeah, well, but you can put it on your CV, you can put it in your LinkedIn profile, and it shows, if you complete all of these, you will show that you've achieved a level of basic competence with AI tools. And it's not saying that, you know, you do this and you'll become a, you know, an AI engineer and you'll be developing the next version of ChatGPT. No, but this is the equivalent of literacy now, and we need to have an understanding of these tools and how to get the best from them. And of course, that will change over time. I actually completed one of the courses. So the courses vary from about 20 minutes to 9 hours, depending on the subject. So I did a 20-minute one just so I could say that I've done one.
Disappointing. We thought you'd do the 9 hours.
Well, yeah. I mean,
you probably know it all anyway, don't you?
Well, the 20-minute one was quite straightforward, but it's still, you know, it some of the things that you know bear repetition, I think. And the really nice thing is, although they say, oh, 20 minutes, that's if you go through it once, right? But you get a quiz at the end, you may want to repeat the quiz. You get a PDF that you can download that summarizes what you've learned, and you can go through that. So a 20-minute one, you could take hours, spend hours with it. It's not a race. But I think it's really good. The government research shows that 60% of businesses report gaps in their AI skills of their workforces. So they're really hoping that people like the NHS and other employers will encourage and facilitate people to take courses like this. In addition to those 14, there's a whole raft of other courses as well, which I tried to work out the difference. As far as I can tell, it's that they are not benchmarked and certified by the government in quite the same way, but they all come from reputable suppliers. And, you know, I think you can do a lot worse than IBM, for example, for your training.
And is it AI that's actually doing the training?
Yeah, so that's quite interesting. So there's a course I did had like little video shorts that would run for 2 or 3 minutes to get across the main points. And rather disappointingly to me, they used an AI avatar or several AI avatars. So that's to say it wasn't a real person, and I spotted it straight away. The person was rather rigid and moving slightly strangely. So increasingly now we don't have people in front of real cameras in real locations. We have a computer-generated background and a computer-generated person. I don't really see the need for that. You know, it wouldn't have killed them to put a real person on there. But in the future, it will be very hard to tell anyway. So, yes, there's even a little warning at the bottom. It says, this is an AI-created avatar.
Right, maybe they were about AI.
Yeah, well, the course I did was about prompting, or what they call mastering prompting or prompt engineering. So prompting being the phrases and questions and instructions that you give a generative AI like ChatGPT. And it taught you, you know, the importance of detail, context, not asking leading questions, you know, those sorts of things. You know,
actually, being serious, that's going to be a really important skill going forward, isn't it? I mean, it's the people who know how to prompt the AI that are going to be valuable.
I think it's a valuable skill now. And it's a very good place to start because it is a valuable skill. Now, I don't think it will be such a valuable skill in the future because AIs will not really need prompting in the way that they do now.
Already. Is it a bit like coding? Like 20 years ago, everyone was saying you've got to learn, you know, five-year-olds should learn about coding. Is that
That was 2 years ago people were giving this advice.
And they're still, I know, yeah, they're still. But are they, is it still a skill that we should all learn, do you think, coding? We'll get the computer to do it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're happy for the skill set to be valid for like 2 years, then yes, it's
right.
But
okay.
I wouldn't. I mean, I used to code for a living. I used to program, you know, IBM mainframes, and you know, it's very different now. So now there's a thing called vibe coding, which is where you describe what you want a piece of software to do, and it tries to build it. It's not very good at the moment. You go through many iterations because conversation is not the best way to specify a problem, much less a solution. You know, so there is still a place for sort of flowcharts and algorithms and things like that. But I think that so in business, there's this thing called software as a service. So you rent software and it does particular jobs for you. You know, it can be your accounting and so forth. The thinking is that that's going to go away and that people will create what they need or be able to modify what they need by just speaking to the system and get it to adjust. So instead of going through loads of settings or learning how to program in C or Pascal or whatever, it will design it for you. At the moment, we're at the early stages of that, but you can see that the number of actual coders will go down. Coding will be seen as sort of very base level function, but analysts will still be needed. Business analysts will still be needed, at least for a while.
And driverless taxis could be launching now, we're told, as soon as September.
Yeah, so Waymo, which is a company owned by the company that owns Google, so it's owned by Alphabet, which also owns Google, are planning to launch a commercial driverless robo-taxi service in London initially, as early as September. There is a change in the law that's required, and the government said it will do it in the second half of the year, so that September date could slip. Other companies like Uber and Lyft are also waiting for the change in the law and will not let Waymo have it all its own way. It's interesting, the Waymo cars are Jaguars. These are not going to be cheap rides in the beginning, but I think the Uber have partnered with a Chinese company called Baidu. So this is interesting because only part of the problem is technological and legal. I think there's a long way to go before people will accept these as being safe, and particularly, you see, in time, they will be safer than human drivers, but they will still have accidents, and the accidents they have will be different in nature to human accidents that we have. So there will be accidents that would not have happened if a human were driving because of the way that they work. Overall, you'll be safer, but there'll be some people, you know, potentially injured that wouldn't be injured, and loads of lives saved, but you won't know who those are. I also think that as AI progresses and takes jobs and causes issues in society, that there is a risk that these cars will get vandalized, I fear, because I just think that, you know,
there will be a backlash.
I
think there will.
Because they're a very visible incarnation.
Look at what happened with Tesla as well. One or two of those were being vandalised. We've got a couple of minutes left. So being the gadget detective as well, you look at some of the new gadgets. Do you want to pick out one to tell us about?
Yeah, so this is a productivity age, you know. So a lot of us work from home or in coffee shops, and we don't always have our own offices, you know. We don't always have the space for that. So this is something that helps us to work and be productive and, you know, not get stiff neck whilst we're typing on laptop computers. It's from a company called Logitech, and it's called the Casa, CASA, which I think means home. Mm. And it gives you the clue. Well, it's a pop-up. They call it a pop-up desk. What it is it's a wireless, high-quality Logitech wireless keyboard, a high-quality trackpad with a glass surface, so wireless, and they fit in this sort of folio-type structure, and the folio becomes the stand for the laptop. So the main problem with laptops is that when you have them on a desk, you're always looking down at the screen, which by the way, is why when people are on a video call using the camera in their laptop, it looks straight up their nose because it's always angled upwards and you're looking down at it, which is not really great for from an ergonomic point of view. So what this thing does is it creates a sloped surface where you can adjust the slope, and then you put the body of the laptop on it, you open it, so you don't have to worry that the keyboard is now sloped because you're using a wireless keyboard in front of it, but the screen is much higher. The screen is much...
I see what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's much more like at eye level. So I think it's really great for people that don't have a permanent workspace, who maybe try and work on the kitchen table or whatever it is, and then have to pack it all away. And the keyboard and the trackpad and the cable fit into this sort of plastic folio. It shuts, and you can literally just put it, you know, on a bookshelf, just put it out of the way. And I just think it's a really... really nice place to work. It works with laptops and tablets, you know, MacBooks, Chromebooks, Windows laptops. The keyboard will work wirelessly with all of those, and so it will work with Mac OS, iPad OS. So if you've got an iPad, you can use that to prop it up. Windows 10, Windows 11. It's not cheap. It's £179.99, but it is... You see, I spend a lot of time looking at gadgets and looking at specifications of this laptop and that laptop and that laptop. But actually, sometimes the ergonomics are worth paying for. Budgeting £180 towards, you know, something like this can just make it much more pleasurable and productive.
I think it's a really important issue. And I see some of my younger colleagues, my Gen Z team, they have a habit of this. I think they've been brought up using laptops, but they haven't put them on stands. So they're either looking down, or what they seem to do now, I've got a lot of colleagues who do this, and I'm worried about what it's going to do for their posture, is they lower their seat, their desk chair, yeah, and then they practically are lying down in the seat so that their eyes are level with the laptop. But it's almost like they're on the beach. But it's terrible for your posture.
Yeah.
No, so, anything true. That raises it up to eye level, I think is a great idea. So
I think it's money well spent, and it's the sort of thing that I would buy from somewhere with a generous returns policy. So, you know, if it doesn't suit you, send it back. But I actually use one of these. I take it to coffee shops and so forth. I find it quite a good way to work. You know, it all feels a bit less Heath Robinson, you know, perching a laptop on your lap or, you know, on a coffee table or something. This works much better. And the keyboard, and Logitech are best known for their keyboards and mice, arguably. And the quality, they haven't skimped on that. That's why it's £180. If you were to buy that keyboard and trackpad separately, you'd pay something close to that anyway, but you wouldn't get, you know, the portability and the adjustability of it. May I just mention one thing as well? The courses, the government courses, if you have any trouble signing up, because the 20-minute course took me 20 minutes to sign up for. So
that was the first test.
Well, I tell you what passed. It was, because when I selected the course, it went through to the provider's website, and the credentials that I'd, you know, the account that I'd signed up for didn't work, and I couldn't work out why it wasn't working. So I needed to set up another account, in fact, one for each provider. So anyway, what I was going to say is, if anyone gets stuck or needs advice or wants to know how to sign up, they can email me hello@gadgetdetective.com. I'll be happy to give them some basic advice.
Fantastic, Fevzi. Thank you so much. Fevzi Turkout there, editor of gadgetdetective.com and the Gadget Detective podcast.